The Academy is organized in order to carry out its work into five programs, with the secretariat sitting at the center, as you see in the slide. What I'm going to do for the remainder of my presentation is I'm going to take each of these programs and set out a bit of detail as to what has been achieved, what the activities have been for the reporting period. So starting with governance and administration, the strategic objectives here are firstly to promote good governance through the council of the Academy, secondly promoting sound financial management, and thirdly sound human resources management. Excuse me. We have four council meetings a year, around about January, May, July, and late October. We have three standing committees, an executive committee, human resources, and an audit and risk committee that meet regularly and that feed into the council meetings. I must report that one of the council members, Professor Pat Burjack, who was also vice president, passed away earlier this year. Further development is that we appointed an HR manager, this is for the first time, in January 2015, on a part-time basis. With regard to the council meetings and attendance, the office bearers showed good attendance, 88%, non-office bearers, 77%. With regard to the membership, so the Academy, I should just add, is a body that comprises more than 441 members who have been elected by existing Academy members. So we have an election process every year, and typically we would add 20 odd or so to our number. So at the moment the total membership is 441, and we have 23 new members, of whom 25% are women and 28% black. With regard to both of those figures, I should add at this point that it is a highly strategic priority for the council, for the Academy as a whole, to do something about improving those figures. And we have implemented strategies, not all of which have been successful or entirely successful, and we are continuing to treat this as one of our highest priorities so that we have a more representative Academy. We also have to think about representation by discipline. We include the natural sciences, technology, health sciences, but also the human and social sciences, and the bar chart that you see gives an indication of the distribution of the membership. So the largest single group of members come from the life sciences. With regard to the staff, at the moment we have a full-time staff of 33, so we really have grown over the last many years. The South African Journal of Science, our flagship scholarly publication, has a part-time editor-in-chief, and Quis, which is our popular scientific publication, has a part-time editor. With regard to physical infrastructure and where we are based, the secretariat is located in Persico Park, which is in Pretoria, just down the road from the Department of Science, Technology and the CSIR. We are renting premises, but it's our goal, it's our objective to acquire our own premises, and this is something that we've been working on for some time now. Let me turn next to the Policy Advisory Program. Excuse me. So the goals of this program are to initiate and to implement evidence-based projects. So this is the engine room of where the evidence-based science advice-related work takes place. Some of the activities we undertake on request, for example, the CSR or a ministry might approach us, but in many cases we initiate where we identify areas of major importance to certainly to the country, if not beyond. We organize our work into a number of standing committees which are listed there, so health, biosafety and biosecurity, energy and environment, humanities, STEM education, that's science, technology, engineering and mathematics education, and poverty reduction. So if we look at the work of the health subcommittee this year in March of 2015, that is the Academy, launched a report on diversity in human sexuality, implications for policy in Africa. The report really examined the extent to which science supports or otherwise arguments in favor of criminalizing sexual or and gender diversity. And it had really arisen out of the legislation that had been passed in Uganda, and we felt that it would be important for an independent body like the Academy to take a scientific approach to these questions. Then last year, 2014, and late in November 2014, we published the proceedings of a workshop on mental, neurological, and substance use disorders. The focus here was on core competencies for the set of disorders, identifying them, what are the challenges, how does one go about implementing them. Continuing with health, we also have commenced last year, about a year ago, so it's not complete, a program on reconceptualizing education and training of an appropriate health workforce in order to ensure improved health of our country. Turning to biosafety and biosecurity, earlier this year we published a what's called an assessment study. This is a study that takes stock and sets out the state, in this case, of biosafety and biosecurity in South Africa. The report evaluates our capacity to detect and control and prevent the spread of infectious agents. In the Energy and Environment Standing Committee, last year we published a report on the state of energy research in South Africa. I should add, I would say that each of these reports is typically the product of many months of work by a specialist panel that has been constituted by the Standing Committee, approved by the Council of the Academy. Eventually they report their work, perhaps through a workshop, and publish the findings, which always are open, so they are distributed widely, placed on the website as well. Then late last year, November 2014, we published an assessment study of the state of green technologies in South Africa. We are still busy with a report on South Africa's technical readiness to support hydraulic fracturing or fracking. We have been asked by the CSIR to carry out this study, and we are in the final stages now, and I hope that it will see the light of day before the end of the year. It's an extremely important topic. With regard to continuing with energy and environment, we've also been working together with the Sudanese Academy, held a workshop in September 2014, and after that was published a joint proceedings report on the impacts of artisanal gold mining. And then in a collaboration with Leopoldina is the name of the German Academy of Sciences, with whom we have a good and close relationship. We have an environment and health symposium planned, which is planned for June, was it 2015, sorry. So that has taken place already. Let me move on to the Humanities Standing Committee. So the main activity over the last year, and a major activity for this committee, mm-hmm. was the conference, essentially a conference whose aim was to take stock of the state of the humanities in South Africa by essentially posing a number of different questions, key questions, which are listed down there. So the conference took place in June of last year. It had a largely South African attendance, but some very eminent invited international speakers and panelists. The focus was really on South Africa in its 20th year of democracy, taking stock of what did the humanities have to say, really, about, for example, satire, literature, university and society, artistic representation versus hate speech. So these are sometimes controversial topics. Marikana, other massacres, the notion of decent work, the city in the 21st century, families in a changing South Africa, and poverty. Well, of course, we have a poverty alleviation committee, but the humanities committee have also been looking at this. With regard to science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, or STEM education, we commenced a project last year on agricultural education and training, and we hope that that report will be completed fairly soon. Then we've been working for some years, this was initiated by the French Academy, on a pilot project known as La Main à la Pâte, which literally translated means the hands in the dough, so really getting to grips with science education, inquiry-based, hands-on. This project will be implemented, the idea is to implement it in 10 different primary schools in China. The Poverty Alleviation Committee was revitalized. It had been there for a while, but had really not been active, had not been properly constituted. We have now done so. It's headed up by Professor Murray Lebrandt, who is an expert, an economist and an expert on poverty, and there is a workshop that is being planned. Turning to the scholarly publishing program, so this is the third of the five. First, a word about open access. So we have a platform known as Cielo. The idea is that there are hundreds, there are I think over 300 journals that are published in South Africa. What the Academy has organized and what we do is to undertake reviews of these journals, often suggest or make recommendations with regard to editorial activities and the like, and then once they are approved, they are placed on this open access database, and it means exactly that. So anybody can get onto the internet and access these journals for free. So far there are 51 journals on the platform, 831 issues, so we have a way to go, but every year we are able to deal with maybe 20, 25 or so journals. Scholarly Publishing Program held a National Scholarly Book Publishers Forum, third annual meeting, and then also an event on the peer review of South African scholarly journals. Not an event, I'd say a set of reviews. So typically these are carried out by field, so within the health sciences and related medical fields, that was done in July last year, within law and related fields, published in August last year. So that would have included the set of recommendations about the journals and which could then be become part of the open access platform. On the Sloan Scholarly Publishing Program, the National Scholarly Editors Forum had its 8th annual meeting in July of last year. They were addressed by two international speakers, Jean-Claude Guédon from the University of Montreal and Lars Bjorns Hager from the Directory of Open Access Journals. So I should say, Honourable Chair and members, that we have the group at the Academy with Susan Feltzman, who within whose portfolio it falls, have been undertaking scholarly work of an outstanding nature, and bit by bit we are we are making available really to everybody in the world, actually, South African journals, which otherwise really would have a very limited readership. Then there is the business of access to core commercial databases. These are different. These are databases for which typically there is quite a substantial cost, and one can imagine the cost that is borne by the universities and various entities. So an advisory committee was established in July 2014, and the business case completed as well. Then still on the scholarly publishing program, we've had a peer review of scholarly journals, books, and conference proceedings. We've assisted the Department of Higher Education and Training with the evaluation of new journal applications and proceedings and other items which the department requires for the subsidy program, the publication subsidy. And in future, ASAF will undertake these evaluations. The open access platform for South African scholarly journals I've mentioned already. Last year, CLO South Africa started a project for journals to benefit from essentially deeper files allowing for better search results, really not simply making the website available, but allowing for much, much improved searchability and therefore usefulness. Then with regard to open access for research and development in Africa, in January this year, we held a consultative forum on open access, which was attended by 45 high-level policymakers and experts from 20 African countries, including from UNESCO, NASAC, the Network of African Science Academies, KNAVE, which is the Netherlands, the Dutch Academy of Sciences, the African Academy of Sciences, and the Kenya National Academy of Sciences, as well as the officials from the Kenyan Ministry of Education, Science, and Technology. The draft open access statement by NASAC, the African Network, was submitted to the body. And then a review of the Journal of Energy in Southern Africa and the Energy Research Newsletter had been completed and the report submitted to DST at its request. The South African Journal of Science is our flagship publication. The journal, as you see, has been in existence for a very long time, 110 years. It was taken over by ASAF not too long ago. It has an electronic and a limited print format, and in fact, I should elaborate by indicating that the council at its meeting yesterday agreed to terminate the limited print format. The number of subscriptions is only about 100 now. The electronic version has proved to be very popular. It's high quality, readily accessible, and so we've gone with that, and one can imagine the cost savings as well. Looked at social media profiles. We have full digital issues, as I said, which are available on a range of digital devices, with the highlight table of contents distributed automatically to over 5,000 recipients. We have had submissions from 54 countries, so that's very impressive for what is a multidisciplinary journal. The impact factor is low, it's 1.03, but this is coming off a low base, and we've seen a steady increase year on year. Furthermore, it's the second most visited title on the set of journals that make up the CLO South Africa platform. Turning to the liaison program, this has got to do with our partnerships and collaborations with various bodies around the continent and around the world. So first of all, I should mention the inter-academy partnership. So unfortunately, there are a lot of acronyms there, but these stand for the IAP, which is the Network of Global Academies, 110 academies of science around the world, of which we remember. The IAMP is the Inter-Academy Medical Panel, and the last should be the IAC, actually, the Inter-Academy Council, which produces reports for bodies such as the United Nations. these three bodies have come together as the Inter-Academy Partnership. I happen to serve on the executive of the IAP and the IAC as a co-chair. Professor Jimmy Forming represents ASAF on the executive of the Inter-Academy Medical Panel. We will be hosting the IAP General Assembly and conference at the end of February, beginning of March 2016. The theme of the conference will be science advice. In addition to the conference, on the day, the 2 days before, we have arranged a workshop on science advice for African academies. So we anticipate around 50 participants who will really get to grips with the issues, pertaining to science advice. The Inter-Academy Medical Panel successfully nominated two young physicians for the IAMP Young Physician Leaders Program or meeting, which took place at the World Health Summit in October of last year. Strategic partnerships include those with the Inter-Academy Council. It's a body which, as I said, undertakes reports for global organizations, also undertakes major reviews. So it reviewed the ASADI program, which is the African Science Academies Development Initiative. It was a 10-year program funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It finished about a year, well, just over a year ago, and was reviewed last year. The review presented to the ASADI board and the Gates Foundation. It was an extremely positive review. There were 8 academies whose capacity was strengthened over the 10-year period, including ourselves. And what we are now looking at is what we refer to as ASADA, the African Science Academy's Development Agenda, which is the successor, the follow-up to ASADI, which we, all of the African academies, some 21, will be owning and driving. Other strategic partnerships include those TWAS, the World Academy of Sciences. It's an academy for the developing world. I won't go through all of the items. I'm just keeping an eye on the time as well. But the conference, the annual conference, took place in Oman last year. It will take place in Vienna this year. It's being hosted by the Austrian Academy of Sciences, and both Professor Dyer and I, and other members of ASAF, will be there. Then there are ASAF members like Professor Dyer, who serves on various TWAS bodies, and also Professor Quraysh Abdul Karim has received a major prize from ASAF, from TWAS rather, last year. The World Academy of Sciences has a regional office for Sub-Saharan Africa, and it used to be based in Nairobi. We have now taken over as the host, and we are very happy to have that regional office with us, which is going to strengthen our activities in Sub-Saharan Africa. ICSU is the International Council for Science. It's a body of some 140 members who are either academies or funding councils, including 32 scientific unions. I was elected last year president-elect, and I'll take over the presidency in 2017. Professor Cheryl Delaroy, who's the rector of Pretoria University, was also elected to serve on the executive board. ASAF now hosts the ICSU Regional Office for Africa, so we have two major regional offices residing side by side with us, so tremendous synergies there. With regard to overseas collaboration, there's a list of bodies there, or academies and the like, with whom we've had memoranda of understanding, always followed up with activities of one kind or another. So I'm going to, just if you don't mind, not read every line, because I want to try and keep my presentation to half an hour, and I've got 4 minutes left. I mentioned ASADA earlier. That's the follow-up to the ASADI program, Major Plan of Action for Development in Africa. And then the AMASA is the African, the annual meetings of African Science Academies, which we will host in 2016, was hosted in Uganda last year. And there are various other collaborations with African academies. we have a range of programs that are directed or concerned with women in science, the issue of better representation and inclusion and participation. Gender in science is a body set up through TWAS, and we have involvement with them. Gender in science also held a workshop hosted by the Science Policy Research Unit of Sussex University earlier this year. With regard to national liaison, we have a gold medal for Science for Society, which is our pinnacle award, awarded to Professor Quraysh Abdul Karim and Professor Jonathan Johnson last year. We have the AU TWAS Prize for Young Scientists by the African Union and TWAS, which is something that we manage, and we had two winners there. And then we also host distinguished visiting scholars, and we had two last year, including Professor Zakri Abdul Hamid, who is the science advisor to the Prime Minister of Malaysia. Quest is our scholarly publication, and we have a print run, it's our popular publication, print run of 25,000. It goes to schools, it's aimed at learners, the scientific community, decision makers, but also the broader public. So it has a very wide distribution. Chair, Honourable Chair, I'd just like to stop at that point and hand over to Mr. Chilwane, who is our finance manager, and I'd like him to take us through just two or three slides on the finances. Thank you.
Thank you, Prof. Honourable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee, thank you very much for this opportunity. We are presenting here ASAF's audited financial statement for the year ending 31st of March 2015, which also talks to the financial year of the report that the President of the Academy has been talking about. On the screen is ASAF's statement of financial position. You will see that in terms of the total net asset of the Academy, it is just below 14 million. That in itself talks to the fact that ASAF remains the smallest entity within the broader family of entities that report to the DST. I know that we did distribute these reports a while ago, and therefore I think that the members of the committee had an opportunity to go through them, and therefore for the sake of time, as the President has alluded, I'm not going to go into detail, but with regard to the statement of financial position, that is what I just wanted to highlight. So can you move to the next slide? The next slide is a statement of financial performance. This talks to what came into the ASAF coffers and what went out in terms of expenditures. At the end of the movement of all the transactions in that period, we reported a surplus of just below 1.9 million. This in itself doesn't mean that the baseline allocation we received was more than what we can spend. Is not that. It is as a result of the fact that in the same period we were able to generate some resources from other small sources of income. Here we talk about advertising in our magazine, which is called the Quest magazine. We talk of some interest that we generate, small interest from the short-term investments that we have, and also membership fee. And therefore, as a result of that, which is money not earmarked for a particular activity, we try by all means to keep it so that we can transfer it to what we call a sustainability fund, which I'm going to talk about later. Can you move to the next slide, please? The next slide is a statement of changes in net assets. This is just to show the movement with regard to the reserves. as I indicated earlier, with regard to the surplus that we reported, that was transferred to what we call the sustainability fund. The intention of the sustainability fund here, ideally, it is supposed to go into what we call an endowment fund, so that we can have. But given the constraints that the academy operates under, and also considering the fact that from national treasury side, they are not in favor of entities accumulating the reserves or surpluses. And therefore, you know, and in the absence of, you know, funding that comes out of this way, we would rather use it towards the acquisition of premises. But unfortunately, in that, the funds that are there are still very small, and therefore, there is no way that you can get decent premises with that amount. Prof, can you move to the next slide, please? The next slide is the cash flow statement. This talks to, you know, the movements, payments that were made, as well as income that we received. With regard to the AFAF premises, the president indicated earlier that it is something that we have been working on here for quite some time, and we are still working on it. Unfortunately, unavailability of financial resources appear to be a stumbling block, and therefore, without funding, really, AFAF cannot, you know, move towards acquisition of a building. Yes, we have taken steps in identifying some potential premises which ideally could serve AFAF needs, but unfortunately, due to lack of financial resources, that has not been possible. And as you know, in property markets, you know, if you don't put something on the table, the next bidder takes it. With regard to where AFAF is currently, we have problems in that, you know, the premises are small to an extent that we don't even have, you know, a decent boardroom that can accommodate our council meetings. And therefore, what is happening lately is that for our council meetings, you know, we have to go and, you know, request for boardrooms at other entities. Our past two council meetings, one took place at the HS, the high CHE, and the very last one took place, apart from the one that took place yesterday, took place at the Department of Science and Technology, because of the fact that at AFAF building itself, we don't have even, you know, a boardroom that can accommodate our council meeting. And therefore, the issue of a building is of serious concern. But as I indicated, you know, the resources that we have, it's not that if we have resources. Ideally, this, the reserve that we have should be kept as a sustainability, under sustainability fund, which we could probably transfer to what is called endowment fund. And therefore, unless if, you know, we get some, you know, windfall from somewhere, we are forced to remain where we are. We know the economic environment, things are tough. Treasury, you know, doesn't have additional funds. Obviously, DST gets funding from the National Treasury, and therefore, even from DST, you know, it is very difficult. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, after, you know, the audit, which I think at the last meeting when we were here, we did allude to the fact that we were going to change our audit firm, considering the fact that The audit firm that ASAP has been using has been doing the audit work for a number of years now, and therefore there was a need for, you know, rotation. A new firm of auditors was appointed, namely Sizwe Nhlabiwa Kobodo. Unfortunately, you know, we got more than what we bargained for, in the sense that apart from changing auditors, ASAP was also audited under a new framework called GRAP. And therefore, the two posed challenges, in the sense that, you know, we were not well prepared for the new frameworks, because we didn't expect that ASAP was going to be audited under Schedule 3A, since ASAP is not a listed entity. And therefore, as a result of that, there was a number of findings to that effect, which we are very concerned about, and we are taking steps to address those findings. We are engaging other, you know, entities that we closely work with. GST is providing a lot of support in this regard, and we highly appreciate it. From all the entities that ASAP interact with, the department unit under Dr. Thomas Afterhide, Mr. David Makula, Happy Molefe, Precious Solo, we are getting support, and really, as I said, we appreciate it, and we wish that they shouldn't lose hope. We will, you know, make sure that those findings are addressed. We have entered into a memorandum of understanding with the NRF for us to be able to use the supply chain database that we have done and about a week or two ago, and that is what we will be using, because ASAP doesn't have the capacity to build its own supply chain database. With that, I would like to leave it there and provide the members of the committee with an opportunity maybe to engage us with regard to questions. Thank you.
Well, Chief, thank you. That concludes our presentation. We'd be happy to take questions. Thank you.
We are so sorry, we apologize again for changing your times, especially that you've got to fly back to Pretoria. Members, we're not going to waste time, we just go straight if there are any questions. I'm so sorry to the two members, Annelie and Nazir, for stepping earlier. I was overpowered by the other members. There's something that we've noticed which we don't want to plug with other people, but I think we need in this situation that every entity that comes, they're complaining of underfunding. When we sit here, whatever recommendation, we're going to make recommendations via the GST. So I think members, there's something that we've got to note about the fact that we're saying GST is underfunded. How they distribute it within the entities is going to be their thing. But I think what we need to talk to, and that's the end thing, we need to talk to the underfunding of GST. And obviously that goes with R&D vote that we're going to be fighting for. Okay, members, you can.
Thank you, Jefferson. Good afternoon. Thank you for the presentation. One of the problems that we have, especially in science and technology field, is the low uptake of African and female scientists. This is not your responsibility to supply them, provide a home for them as such. But what are you doing to play your part in addressing this problem? That's the one question. You've got 400 and odd members. Okay. What is the benefit to being a member of ASA? And the last one is, I see there's been a drop in income from publications. So what would you attribute this to, the drop? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to ask concerning the audit. I've gone through the findings, and it's quite substantial. Could you perhaps just explain to me that ASAP is not registered as a public entity, but you were audited as being a 3A entity? Could you just give us a bit more background as to the reason for that and what's the status now of ASAP? And then also just in terms of if one look at the like policies, procedures, systems, everything, what time frame are you looking at? Will you be able to do comply with this within the next financial year? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think all the other questions I'm covered. And thank you for the presentation. Just need to have a breakdown of the structure of our services, including gender and race and stuff like that. If you don't have it now, you can send to the committee. The other one, I wanted to find out those IAMP young physicians who were nominated to go to Berlin. Who are they? Because you know, you say this document is public and it's, anybody who does research later can access it. So, and also it helps us to profile them in the house, because it's good work that is done by young physicians. The last one was in relation to Dr. Lotrit has touched it that the findings, there's quite a number of them. But I was interested in 114 and 23 on regular expenditure. Because I saw on the AG chart you are not green. You are yellow and white. yeah, that's just those questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Madeline. I think we can
try to
take it. There seems to be a very gray area between you and HHS. But you don't have to explain it now. Because you're doing almost at certain areas, you're doing the same thing. How do you do that? That's what
I think. Attempt perhaps a brief response to that particular question. So, ASAP has a dual mandate, so we elect members who have excelled in their fields. The second part of our mandate has to do with science advice. So, I would say just about everything else that we do in one way or another addresses the issue of science advice, what is the state of research and so on, responding to requests from public entities or maybe from government or in parliament and the like. So if one compares with an organization like say the HSRC or the NRF for that matter, I think in a sense one might find an overlap in that certainly I think the HSRC, the CSIR as well, for example, are required to provide advice, all of these organizations. And in fact, this is something which previous Minister Derek Harnacombe and now Minister Naledi Pandor has taken up quite actively with these organizations. What is the science advice ecosystem? You know, organizations
individual advisors and the like. So I would say, coming back to your question, that the difference is one of emphasis, in the sense that science advice, promotion of science and science education is a huge part of what we do, right across natural sciences, technology, health sciences, social sciences as well, whereas, of course, the HSRC is human sciences only. If I could turn to the questions by honourable members, I'll attempt to answer some of them, and I might ask my colleagues to respond to some as well. So the first question we had, a very important one, about female and African, shall we say, participation in science, broadly speaking, whether at school or beyond. Well, there are a number of organizations, including ourselves, who are making a huge effort at gaining substantial improvement in participation, first of all at the school level. So I spoke about the La Main à la Pâte program, where what one does is, rather than simply going to schools and trying to get young people interested and enthusiastic about science, which is not a bad thing to do, doing so by implementing an inquiry-based program where the learner or the student actually is taught how to get to grips with the science, rather than sitting there and listening to a lecture or whatever. So it's a highly active approach. Of course, this problem, in a sense, it's a kind of domino effect in that the problem is replicated at the higher levels. So we talk about the numbers, particularly in the sciences, of women and blacks who are doing science degrees. Particularly serious problem at postgraduate level, because that is where our community of scholars will be coming from, and where our ASAF members of the future will be coming from. So if those pools are, if we are not able to ensure that we have representative pools, then we are going to have a problem. Our organization is addressing this as well at the level of membership. The numbers are, and I think we did have another question about breakdown. So the numbers are, what is it, it's just on one of the slides, 28% black, 24% women. We are not satisfied with those numbers. What we are doing is, for example, looking at the pool. Who is out there who are academics, who are potential members? It's important also to look at universities, let's say, that have very few, if any, ASAF members, because individuals, they tend to get overlooked. There's nobody to nominate them and so on. So let's go and beat the bushes and find the outstanding people. That and other strategies that we're adopting. So a question about benefits of membership. Well, good question again. The one benefit, if you like, is that it is an honor, and I would say that it's a huge honor to be elected a member. So that is something for the individual. But then I would go on to say that it's very much a case of, to quote President John F. Kennedy, not what my academy can do for me, but what I can do for the academy. So service is a really important part. That's why our premier award is known as the Science for Society Award. It's not enough to be a fantastic scientist if you have not served as well. So we see benefits in that way, and really one would hope that as many as possible of our members get involved in our different panels and a range of activities. There's a question about the drop in income publications. Can I leave that because I'm going to ask either the executive director or the finance manager to respond to that, and also the questions that we've had about the audit findings. I'll come to those in a moment. I think the only other question, not of a financial nature, to do with the IAMP, the Young Physician Leaders who are they? So perhaps, Professor Dive, you could just elaborate on that.
Thank you, Professor Reddy, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Let me take the question from two members about the audit findings, because I think that's what's really occupying our minds at the moment. As our financial manager has stated, it was a new firm of auditors. The audit that we underwent this year came as a complete surprise to us, for many reasons. We're an unlisted public entity. We have been undergoing audits under the auspices of the Auditor General for the past couple of years. We've never had this intense scrutiny. Our internal audit also didn't prepare us for it. So it came as a surprise. It's the first time we've undergone a performance audit. We've never had that before. I think in AFIF defense, we are a small entity with a small budget. Most of our budget goes to directly related to activities. There's very few support services. We're a very lean organization, so we don't have a supply chain management unit. We've got minimal HR resources, minimal everything, because the funding goes directly to all sorts of activities. And I think the key thing at the end of the audit for us with all these management findings is now to try and get some clarity on the status of AFIF and to what extent we have to comply with the BFMA. We are unlisted. We've had many, many meetings with DST and with National Treasury with the assistance of DST to try and get this clarity. At the moment, we're still waiting for final word from the legal advisors of National Treasury on exactly what the situation is. But the key issue is actually the Science and Technology Laws Amendment Act, because in there there's a specific clause that says AFIF must comply with the PFMA. So despite the fact that we're unlisted, we have to comply. So unless we can get that act changed, we have to address all these measures. And I think honourable members will know that compliance costs money. It's not a case that we don't want to comply. We do our best with a limited budget, but most definitely compliance costs money. So we have been engaging with DST. They've been doing a lot to assist us, but they don't have the resources to give us. So we have been engaging, as Mr. Chawani has said, with the NRF to assist wherever they can, and we just have to do what we can to go through one finding after the other to address them and do the best within our limited budget, and at the same time address the status question and the amendment of the Act, which we are doing. I'll leave Mr. Chawani to answer the question about the specific findings of 14 and 23. Perhaps just take up the question about why the income dropped from the publication. Without having the figures in front of me, the answer I would give would be possibly a reduction in advertising due to the economic downturn. It's just been more difficult to get advertising revenue. I think let me leave it there. The IMP, Young Physicians. So yes, we have a number of programs which allow young people to be nominated for leadership positions like this. So it's a great honor to be nominated as an IMP Young Physician Leader. How we do this, we send out a call around the country, we get a whole lot of nominations, we then go through a selection process, and we submit names to the head body, which is based in Trieste in Italy. They then select the final number, and then we then publicize these names, because it is a great honor, and you're right, it's a great opportunity. And we're very pleased that South Africa does very well, usually. If you think about it, they don't elect more than about 30, 40 globally, and virtually every year we get two or three. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members of the Committee, thank you. Thank you once more.
Sorry, can I just hold? Just some clarity. You said because of due to the drop in advertising, we've got a drop in the number of, in the amount of income from publication. I don't understand. Can you just explain to me, please?
Through you, Chair. So, Quest Science Magazine, we earn income from people who advertise in the magazine. And I'm surmising that the advertising dropped, and that's why the revenue dropped.
Thank you once more, Honorable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee. Yes, with regard to a regular expenditure, from the Auditor General side and the National Treasury side, anything that is seen not to have complied with the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act, the PFMA in its entirety, as well as National Treasury regulations, is regarded as irregular expenditure. And therefore, in line with what we reported earlier, that with regard to the new framework that ASAF was audited under, in a number of ways, we were caught off guard. The President and the Executive Officer have spoken to the fact that ASAF is not a listed entity, and therefore we didn't even know that ASAF was going to be listed, to be audited under a Schedule 3A, as a Schedule 3A entity. And therefore, when you take those factors into account, all of them, they played a role in what the AG and National Treasury will regard as irregular expenditure. But I can assure this committee that every expenditure we made was authorized, documented. We have audit trail for all the expenditures that were made from ASAF side, authorized by the executive officer with the full knowledge of our council, not only the president. And therefore, from our side, it came as a surprise that in terms of their definition, they regarded those expenditures as irregular. Because irregular in itself, you know, it invites a number of interpretations. You know, it means different things to different people. And therefore, we did engage them and questioned the fact that from our side, we don't regard it as irregular expenditure. Yes, we didn't comply fully with those prescripts of the acts, as I alluded to, but the nature of those expenses itself didn't amount to what should be regarded as irregular expenditure. But because, you know, they were adamant with regard to the way they interpreted it, then it ended up being regarded as such. According to the Treasury, it is a fine line. One has to apply his or her mind very carefully in classifying some of these expenses. And therefore, there is no doubt in our minds that even the auditors, Susan Baliwa Kobodo, the way they regarded those expenditures, that you know, it's a thin line. It's a thin line. It depends, and therefore, but in any event, we take their recommendations and findings very seriously. We are engaging with the National Treasury in addressing this issue. And it is our wish and hope that by the end of this current financial year, before the end of the current financial year, we will have addressed those aspects that contribute to this. Unfortunately, some of the things take much longer to implement. It is not something that you can do overnight. For instance, with the listing of ASAF itself, that still remains an issue, as our executive officer indicated. We are engaging the relevant units within the National Treasury in addressing some of those things. Thank you.
Which I'd just like to check. I think we've covered all the questions there, but I just want to double check. We had a question from Honourable Maseka, if I put your name right, about the breakdown instructions. So I'm not sure that we've addressed that completely. Would you mind repeating that question, please?
That if you could give us a breakdown of the structure. If you don't have it now, you can send it to the committee.
You mean the staffing structure?
Including the board.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, the board comprises 12 members, and then in addition there is a representative nominated by NACI, the National Advisory Council on Innovation, so that makes a 13-member board, all of whom, or I say none of whom, are employees of ASEF. We're all full-time doing something or other, or maybe retired for that matter. That is the board. Then the secretariat, which is based in Pretoria, has a staffing complement of 33. Comprising the executive officer, and we now have five managers, so a fairly flat structure of the executive officer, five managers, and then various staff members reporting to the managers in the different programs that I spoke about earlier, whether it's scholarly publication, governance and administration, and so on. So, certainly, if you'd like, through the chair, if you'd like, finer detail and further breakdown, we'd be very happy to let you have that.
Just to add, through you, Chair, the breakdown actually is in the annual report. So the annual report on page 25 lists the people in the secretariat, and you can see there, so I think the honourable member wanted a breakdown by race and gender. Mm-hmm. So I think it is there. If you would like us to do the totalling up, because it's not always clear, we'll do it happily and send through those.
Send a short summary.
The same for council. The councils are all, council members are all named there, but we can send through the details.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. No, we definitely accept your report. We want to look at it, but I think the bigger picture is that it's the whole development of science and technology that is underfunded, as compared to the other countries, because we can't allow this development to work as if it's just a South African development of science and technology, because they are competing globally. So if they are competing globally, we've got to look at other countries at the same level and say, but it will have to be done through DSC. But what they do with that money is something that we can discuss with them. That some of these areas are very important. But we accept your report, we put on the recommendation. You might not find the recommendation that says, us have to be given more money. But we talk about DSC and that. So thank you very much. I think Nazir always says you can't congratulate a fish for swimming. But I think there's an area that we need to underline there, is that most of the entities have got a specific mandate, which is not about the finances themselves. It's about a particular thing. But the CFO, they come to assist that particular mandate that is given. So the reason why sometimes we congratulate you is because irrespective of the fact that you're a scientist, you're managing to handle your finances. But don't worry, Mr. Schiller, when somebody talks, you look at the iris. You know, if somebody is lying, you know the iris, the dark part of the eye. If somebody lies, is lying, it dilates. It's true, it dilates. But if somebody is honest, he doesn't tell it, he doesn't continue to. So I was looking at your eyes and I how it was behaving as well today. And I'm confused that I'm not telling. But in any case, we know scientists are worried about themselves.
And if you're a politician and you practice enough at lying and stuff.
So I don't think that maybe the last one you should honor some of the scholars from the politician side. There are some scholars here, not scholars in the sense of being scientists, but scholars in the sense of doing good work. So you must honor them too, and allow them to be part of the academy. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
So in today, they don't need to come here because you are honest, you have done this good work. They don't need to convince us anymore. So they're not here today. So congratulations for having that good auditive work. Thank you for hosting us last week, and we saw the good work, some part of the good work, and we are hoping that you are going to continue the next 7 years. Are going to continue that good work that you are doing at CSIR. So I think with that, I will allow you to carry on and tell us what you have been doing with the money that you wanted last week. And then you can tell us the challenges. We're not going to be questioning you only on what you're going to tell us. Though it's an oversight, but even some of the things that were picked up as we move along, we might ask you about the things that were spent and help them to what you will be telling us. You might not know all the members, but be that may, let's introduce them, even if you are going to forget them. Of course, honorable Maseko here, she's in trouble. She collapsed the bridge in N1 in November. And I'm sure CSIR should help her because she's in trouble now because that bridge collapsed. And she may use the remote control to collapse it. So you can help her. She can go home. Next to her is honorable Tuk Tuk. She's from the smallest province, I mean the biggest province geographically, but with the smallest population. And she wants more males to go to that. You can help her scientifically. Take them there. Next to her we've got honorable Matale, who wants to reach 106 years. He doesn't want to die in 80 or 70. Yeah, and a lot of people in Limpopo usually die around about that age. Now he says he's going to live to that age. Now if you could help him, in Limpopo it's already happening, but you can investigate why are they living so long. And he's hoping that he's going to live so long. Beyond him is another group, Nick Koronov. Nick is a wine fundi. He's from Western Cape. Now, if you could help him refine his wine, he can't live without his wine, especially on Saturday. It becomes worse when Springbok gets beaten by Japan. A new team beats. They beat us like you know the thing that they used to eat. Now they carry the Springbok. Then he becomes worse, then he gets so worried. So if you could refine the wine. Beyond him is honorable Lawson. The only thing that you could have, honorable Lawson, is to make sure that the signboard in Bloemfontein. You get lost in Bloemfontein. I'm sure if some of you have driven around Bloemfontein and you don't know Bloemfontein, you will get lost there because there are no signboards. If you could help them. Thank you very much. Chelsea, welcome to. The only time I met you was at the theater, but I think of next summer. But you said you're a lecturer. So, okay, let's give over to you.
Okay, thank you very much, and once again, let me thank you for coming to our conference last week. It was most appreciated, and the conversations that we had were most fruitful and most useful indeed. And we'll be indeed very keen to, as you suggest, to have you come and visit and show you in greater detail because what you saw was just what we're displaying at the conference center. Come and see a greater more of what we do within CSIR. We warn you if you want to see everything, it will take several days, but we can be selective. Allow me, Chair, then to start by doing introductions now, and we're very happy to be accompanied. appointed Gandhi Patel, I was a member of the board today, and he may want to express one or two words on behalf of the board before I introduce other colleagues.
Thank you very much. Okay. Once again, also I would like to thank you for gracing our occasion. And it was not an easy occasion in the sense that sometimes when you are trying to model yourself up there, you want to make sure that what you say is what people will understand to be the message you want to convey. That also, I think I would like to, I'm standing here today before, on behalf of the chairperson of the board of CSIR, who is unable to come through. My name is Gandhi Badela. I am an engineer and an advocate at the same time. So I'm working in two areas. But I think it is also a great pleasure that we have an institution like CSIR that is able to do the things it is doing. And with your guidance also, we would like also to thank you in the sense that in the past years, we have been doing things and we know that it wouldn't have been possible without your support and your guidance. And we also acknowledge the role of oversight and accountability. As such, when we sit in our board meetings, one of the things that we raise with the executive members is that consistency and seeing the impact in society is what comes and what will enable us to do more. But I think also more important is the issue around transformation, and we want to do transformation, not for the sake of doing transformation, but to see the impact of the results of transforming. And I am sure the executives will indicate that we are putting quite serious pressure on them to ensure that that happens. And I think generally the fact that we financially we've been doing well, we also have been doing well in terms of the outputs. And I'm sure we were all felt great as South Africans last year when an announcement was made around laser. And there is quite a few things that is in the pipeline. I'm sure you are aware of, as an example, the beneficiation of titanium, which is one of the biggest investments that we've done. We've also doing something also around energy, and to an extent that we have had to approach our municipality to make them aware that us doing what we are doing might mean them losing money. And therefore, we need to have a balance in the things that we do. But we are definitely trying to look for solutions that will have an impact in society, but also look at solutions that will enable South Africa to stand up in the world and be counted among the countries that are contributing to the development of society. And I think under our belt, as we saw in our 70th anniversary ceremony, we can count a number of things from lithium, battery cells to laser, things that we have done and that are produced in South Africa. But without taking the thunder from the executives, I thank the welcome that I've received today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're indeed privileged to have members on board who can understand both the technology side from an engineering perspective as well as the legal challenges we often face when we seek to commercialize, for example, intellectual property, protect and commercialize our IP. That will be one of the things we may talk about as we proceed.
I'm Rachel Chikwamba. I'm a member of the CSIR executive responsible for engagement with stakeholders and partners in our strategic communication.
I'm Lawrence Kitha. I'm the CSIR group executive for operations.
Mulisi Mutuku, group executive responsible for research and development.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Sturdy. I'm the CFO at CSIR.
Elia Mandigani from the CSIR Parliamentary Office.
He doesn't know whether he belongs to you or he belongs to you.
That's a very difficult question because engineers do become doctors sometimes.
Okay.
the chair is getting behind in terms of science. We have babies that are test tubes these days.
Thank you, Chair. We will then proceed in the spirit in which you've set the tone of the meeting and be in discussion mode, and all come questions are going to proceed. I will indeed not just talk all the way through. I'd invite my colleagues to speak to the various particularly areas that they happen to fall within their portfolios, but they by no means restrict themselves necessarily to that. They might want to restate something, for example, I may not have explained with sufficient clarity and so on. We take a point entirely, Chair, and we take it very seriously that we should account, because after all, we made an allocation financially to get things done. But our view is that beyond that, even if there were no allocation whatsoever, and we had other means of raising funds to do what we do, we remain a public institution with the mandate that we have. So we would want to come and account here on what we have done, whatever the source of the resources may be. If we're lucky, one day we make a lot of money out of commercializing our research activities. We'll plow that back into promoting our mandate further. We will talk through those topics, not necessarily exhaustively. We'll also be guided by you on what you want to learn more about. So we will talk broadly and not necessarily in linear, sequential fashion through those topics. And and then proceed quickly to question mode, because that will then give us a guidance on whether, for example, we want to talk more about people, about learning and growth, or indeed about something that we may have omitted altogether from what we have indicated here. But at a glance, our key performance indicators were as shown on that slide. By the categories shown, scientific and technical, learning and growth, finance and governance. And if you just look at the right-hand side, and indeed you already have an interaction with the Auditor General, but we see that the green color denotes that everything is okay. And you'll see if you make comparisons of target against actual, that indeed the actuals are typically greater than target. On all of the KPIs that I indicated on the slide, which we can then stick to in greater detail. But in principle, if one were interested simply in that, then that would be the slide that summarizes the position of the organization. And that's, we hope, we intend to sustain exactly that sort of picture, or to change or adjust the numbers in the future. Whatever it is that we may do. We shall highlight a number of initiatives such as our industry innovation partnerships and our partnerships. In this particular, what we're looking at there at the top is an example of an enterprise that is supported by our biotechnology initiative that supports such enterprises. Are supporting the first six such enterprises with biotech products. We'll talk a bit more about that. I don't know whether I want to do so now or at a later stage.
But maybe there's just one issue one I would like to raise in that respect, is that the board has found it necessary that we also put direct the executives to the fact that we need to interact more with state-owned entities, so that when we do that, the state-owned entities must also be in the picture in terms of what we are doing with them.
Thank you, Advocate. I'm delighted you raised that point, because in fact, the
underneath there you see that there's a look of Transnet, and it's a very successful initiative that we're very excited about, that we're collaboration between ourselves and Transnet, that has involved Transnet being involved in setting up research facilities on our premises. Just yesterday we were having a similar conversation with ESCO, something similar. And of course we have a long ongoing relationship with Danel on technology development. Incidentally, much of the work there that is supported by the ITC is with the Department of Labor. A lot of the resources come from the Department of Labor to keep in vision to grow the industry, small enterprises that are based on the technology that come out of it. It's not just necessarily purely technology, it's also the support to do with simply running companies and so on. And then of course all of this is underpinned by infrastructure like our Center for High Performance Computing and SunREN, the National Research Network that connects various institutions, universities ourselves. And ideally we'd like to see this being extended also to institutions of learning at lower levels than higher education, i.e. high schools and so on. We'll talk about each of these topics in a little bit more detail. I already mentioned some parts, but again, we'll talk about that. The mandate you are familiar with, for us to do multidisciplinary science and technology research and innovation to foster international interest, industrial and scientific development. This qualifier, multidisciplinary, really is an important one, in particular in a world that is, if you like, getting more complex and where the interaction of different disciplines is increasingly important in developing science and technology to have an impact on the lives of people and the economy. And once again, we will give examples of that, for example, even in our pilot programs of beneficiation of titanium and glaze, South African glaze, that I'll at some point call upon my colleagues to talk about in a bit more detail. Here we like showing the picture just as a pictorial indication of our mandate, that the mandate is it's a mouthful, but the bare minimum is that we need to recognize what are the important things, what are the inputs, not about to have impact ultimately at the top. We need to have human capital is fundamental, without people, and so not just bringing people into the organization, but being actively involved in the development of people is absolutely key. This game is ultimately a game about people, about knowledge that is developed by people, that sits in people's heads. Even though it may then take the form of, well, ultimately publications or objects and so on. The research facilities, the financial resources and good governance, that's essential. If we don't have any of that, we can't do anything else about that. And if any of that is broken, we can spend an inordinate amount of time dealing with governance issues, dealing with challenges that take attention away from what we want to be doing. So we guard very jealously that bottom layer there. And then that enables us to engage in various activities of research, development, and innovation, the actual activity, the outputs associated with that, the publications, reports, patents, technologies of various kinds. And then associated outcomes that are in keeping with our mandate, developing scientific and technological capabilities, and setting up new areas of industry, and so on. And ultimately, with the intention, of course, of having the impact of improved quality of life, industrial and scientific development, the sort of things that are articulated to our, for example, the National Development Plan. And this is an indication of having mentioned the NDP, how we view the manner in which we respond to the imperatives, the vision of the NDP, to the imperative to do something about poverty, inequality, and unemployment. We're not going to do that as necessarily a CSR through, for example, creating thousands and thousands of direct jobs. But
trade industries that may have a huge impact on the economy and indirectly create a lot of jobs. Somebody spoke about the old street. So, as we've indicated, our imperative is to identify some key determinants of poverty, inequality, and unemployment, and try and understand. Now, I've got some things for you. And then guided by the National Planning Commission's diagnostic report. But let me not dwell too much on that. What I want to move on to the stories rather than. Things that we all agree on, and I'm not underplaying this. It's absolutely important, but it's something we, and in fact, as well as we speak, I'm hoping, and I'd like to invite members of the committee to perhaps share thinking with us and challenge us on what your perception is on the kind of role that you believe in organizations like ourselves ought to be playing with regard to a direct or indirect response to poverty, inequality, and unemployment. At the time, one might argue, perhaps it's phrasing differently a question, a matter that one might refer to, not so much as referring to as responding to poverty, but by creating jobs and growing the economy, and therefore responding to poverty as opposed to responding in a direct way, in the same way that, for example, the giving of social grants to people might be deemed to be a direct response. But anyway, the things that we do are exactly those: direct research and technology innovation, maintaining and enabling environmental good governance and human capital. I'm really repeating what I've said, in other words, a little earlier. Do feel free,
I'd like us to add one element around human capital. One of the things that we have as a challenge with CSIR now also is that sometimes we develop people to a certain level and then they leave CSIR. The question has always been, when these people leave, are they adding to the bigger number of people who are contributing in other sectors or not? But also we've had a challenge to say, maybe it is also our responsibility to produce more of these people so that we've got out there people who are able to do more in other sectors, because at first we've been grumpy about the fact that people are leaving, or sometimes people are leaving, but I think there is a thinking now that says, in actual fact, one of our roles is to develop capacity, and this is one of the KPIs that may not be seen by the portfolio committee members, but it's something that is also happening, because once somebody reaches a certain level and feels he can contribute more in another space, we should be able to open up and allow people to do that.
That's a picture of currently the choices that were made by way of high-level areas that refer to as research impact areas, where we are seeking to make different research and technology. Now, we recognize that any particular choice is a choice. You know, one can always say there are other things you can have in there. But the natural environment builds defense and security, health, energy, industry. When you say industry, I'm talking about both supporting existing industry, but also seeking to create new areas of industry. That's absolutely key to our mandate. And some of the things we're doing, we have not done as much as all that in energy, for example, and we're seeking to, while we're ramping up our activities in that area. And that also has to do with the fact that the other players in the country, ESCOM being a player for delivery of energy, and then other players like research that gets conducted at universities or under institutions that belong to the Department of Energy. So the choice of areas here ideally should be complemented by having a fuller conversation of the ecosystem of who else is there. With like the Agricultural Research Council and so on and so forth, and MINTEC, Council for Geoscience, so that one has a full picture of the various interventions various areas of work that different institutions are involved in and sometimes collaboratively. But we have a number of enabling technologies that distinguish us, that that, if you like, are the signature of who we are as an organization: nanotechnology, ICT, material science, the technology, photonics. You know, those are the things that we then deploy. And of course, embedded in that is not just the infrastructure, but the people who to then respond to all of those research indicators that we refer to higher up here. I'm inclined at this point to, I think, to call upon my colleagues to join in and perhaps take a particular area and speak to it a little bit more.
Thank you very much. So these are the areas, as our CEO has highlighted, that we've chosen to focus our energies on in trying to make a difference in the challenges as presented earlier. And of course, just to add to what Dr. Sibisi has said, is what informs the choices that we make here. And it is indeed what he has spoken to, the National Development Plan and the outcomes that are outlined therein. So I will talk to this first area, which is the natural environment. It is a strategic focus area for us, where we do a variety of things, and I will not necessarily read through the slide, but rather try to talk to what the slides are saying. We do a variety of things, ranging from modeling climate change. There is a lot of talk about how the climate is going to change in the future. And the idea is to try and predict what the future might look like, so that when we plan for the future, climate change impacts on water, on energy, and on food and food production. So you can imagine that being able to make decisions on what agriculture ought to look like and how it ought to be undertaken, decision-making support based on the models and climate models that we create, is an important enterprise. We also look to support sustainable planning in various sectors, waste management, biorefinery, how we use waste and so on. And of course, as human beings, we derive benefit in a lot of economic activity on the basis of natural resources like water, marine and coastal services, and so on. Our job is to say, how do we do that sustainably, applying science and technology as we do? So the example that is given in this particular presentation as a first one is one on woody cover, in which we collaborate with others to establish a very fine map of woody cover for South Africa. When others in the world create maps of vegetation cover, they create very high, very far off maps per broad region, which gives us some information, but not detailed information. By being able to very finely look at our own region of the world, we create deeper maps that allow us to understand the sort of vegetation that we have, the extent of the cover, in order to be able to do, for example, remove alien vegetation, which invades the ecosystems and landscapes and wastewater and so on, destroys the natural vegetation, monitor for carbon and climate change modeling, as well as manage the forest, because we can see closely and deeply. So we use techniques such as synthetic aperture radar and then the light detection and radar maps to really look closely, so we can even have the depth of vegetation cover, and you can actually not just see the coverage, but also the depth of coverage. We also then use that sort of information to manage, I already mentioned clearing of alien invasive species, but as well, we can also then protect wetlands. Where are the wetlands? What is their status? And how do we protect them? So that's the first example of something that we can do using these radar and satellite technologies. The second example that we cite is an example in which we look to support the Department of Forestry and Fisheries to manage a very critical resource, which is our fisheries and our source of fish in the sea. What they do there is to monitor the population of the fish and make sure that they understand that, in order to allocate the quotas to those that make a business of fishing, so that they keep the fishing industry sustainable. What we have done there is to work with the technology of gliders. These gliders are controlled by satellites, and they've got some acoustic echo sounders which actually can look into the sea, find the fish, and give us images of samples of the populations in critical parts of the sea. This information is then used by the department to understand how much fish there are, how it is rejuvenated over the after the off-fishing period, and then they allocate the quotas, and so the industry can continue to operate sustainably. This is a technology where we have these gliders that can be at sea at length, because we don't necessarily need to control them other than remotely using satellites. So that's part of what we do in the natural environment, and we did the first work successfully December of 2014, and this has taken root. They will continue to use it. So that's this area.
Before they do so, it's a very nice story that Rachel told in general about the gliders. The glider you saw rests on the surface, but you've got others which so a bit like dolphins. You know, they you bleed them and they dive and collect data from fairly deep. I think can't find out the kilometer. On, for example, it might be temperature data, come back up. This is important, for example, for a variety of applications, not least being climate change studies, because the temperature of the sea and variation of the temperature of the sea tends to affect a lot of things like CO2, capacity to absorb CO2, and so on. But before I'm out of my depth on that one, then
thank you, Dr. Smithy. So as you can see from the slide, in the built environment, we address a number of areas, from improved buildings, where we do things like design guidelines for public buildings. We look at how we can utilize advances in materials to make buildings more affordable. We look at new construction methods. We look at design methods for roads, ports, and railways, more efficient public and freight transport, and decision support for planning and transforming of human settlements. We, for instance, had Deputy Minister Nell from COTSA at the CSIR recently, where we discussed this last point with him about how we can use satellite imagery and geographical information systems to assist with urban and other planning. If I can move to a more specific example, if you look at the CSIR mandate, it is quite a broad mandate, and it is a risk that we start doing things that other people should be doing. And I think the work that we're doing in the city of Satuzi is a good example of where we are assisting with very serious issues around water shortages and better management of the water resources, but where we are doing it by building the municipality's capability instead of doing what the municipality should be doing. Maybe to move on to the next slide. So it also includes the reuse of sludge and wastewater treatment. I won't go into all the details, but I understand the slides are available. In transport, I think we saw earlier the logo of Transnet, where we've got a very strong partnership with Transnet, rebuilding and reinvigorating South Africa's rail capability. But we do a range of things in the transport sector, addressing issues around inadequate transport in rural areas, roads and rail that I've mentioned already, and in some cases the poor condition of public transport vehicles. We are working on a model that will create a thorough understanding of the links between the economic sectors to aid decision making. We are an unusual country in that our hub of economic activity is inland. In many other countries, this is at the port. So we have a special problem around keeping the cost of logistics low and keeping South Africa competitive despite this geographical oddity. And this this kind of model helps us to predict the impact of interventions, to determine where interventions should be and how long it will take, how the desired effect, and also to analyze the freight and passenger transport over land, air and water. This is a slide on the work we do with Transnet, and on the left there you see a small picture of the power laboratory that is on the CSIR campus, but it is a Transnet facility, and we were fortunate that the president visited this a number of years ago, and he was impressed, as were we, with the young people that are developing skills in engineering on practical projects. You may be aware of Transnet's very ambitious projects to build an African locomotive and other projects that they have to build complex technology platforms. Some of the other work we are doing there is around, for instance, something where we use our laser expertise to refurbish components that otherwise would have had to be discarded. We are also had a very fruitful discussion yesterday with Eskom, where we are looking at refurbishing turbine blades and other components in power stations that can, in that way, then lessen the downtime for maintenance and so on. In defense and security, we do a number of things. You may be aware that CSIR has a very long history of working in a defense environment. In fact, 70 years ago, some of the early work on radar was done by CSIR, and some of the things we do there is information security. I think we all understand that today this is a critical part of defense and of security, is to be secure in the digital environment. We have various applications of situational awareness. And I'll talk a bit more about that related to the work we do with Stan Parks. Similarly, with command and control and coordination, the ability to deploy forces and to coordinate their interactions. And then many problems in the defense and security environment involve multiple agencies. If you can imagine border control, for instance, you have everyone from SARS, Home Affairs, the police, defense there, and it's important that these different organs of state can interact with each other, so interoperability between their systems becomes a major issue. Then quickly, some of the practical examples, we've assisted the South African Navy for a system that trains pilots to land with a helicopter on a ship that is rocking to and fro in quite rough weather that one can have around South Africa's coast. Maybe let's move on to one of the other examples. In fact, this is the example that I was talking about. So the pilot can sit here and practice until they know how to land on this rather small ship. If you see the actual videos, it's quite a feat to do this. Next slide. Another project, I think one of the things after 94 that we were looking at is to look at how South Africa can use the defense capability that was built here in isolation for other purposes. And I think one of the interesting examples and very important ones is where we are helping the sandparks in mitigating rhino poaching. And we have a major project there to assist them with situational awareness, sensors, some very exciting work in using radar as a sensor, and where we can, where we are doing world-beating work around distinguishing between wildlife and human movement in the park. This is another example of that. Maybe Rachel wants to take off.
Okay, and the third impact area in which we devote quite a significant part of our resources is in health, where we take a two-pronged approach to our interventions. The first category of interventions look to supporting the health care delivery system, and the second category looks to reducing the burden of disease. So in this regard, in supporting the healthcare system. We look at the National Health Information System, where we've done a variety of interventions to include architecting the database of the South African population, creating that prototype where everybody is going to have their name on in order to support the NHI so that people can have their name registered, they can get access to healthcare services. We also look to support that with health information systems so that data can be collected electronically instead of being collected on cards that then get piled in clinics as a record of patients is not a continuous record. Looking at combating disease, we do everything from creating new biotherapeutic technologies and remedies to also then looking at health infrastructure that minimizes the transmission of infectious disease, notably here tuberculosis. We also then create devices, technological devices that are ICT enabled to allow the primary healthcare givers that may work in remote places to be able to do very basic diagnosis on the patient and determine whether they can really deal with the problem or refer people on to the district hospitals. This way, we try to really sift the problem so that we do not congest the healthcare system upward. We also then look to understand and learn from the rich heritage of indigenous knowledge and natural products, and then add value to that, try to support people who bring those herbal-type remedies into the mainstream. And of course, agro-processing is something that happens post-harvest of food and food products. We then use our technologies to try and add value to the produce through food processing so that we can support our children in other parts of the population in combating malnutrition. So in short, we can cite a variety of examples, but we'll very quickly talk through a few of the ones that we do. This particular example cited here is where we support the National Health Laboratory Services, who provide 80% of our diagnostic services by looking at a bottleneck that they have, which is there is a shortage of very highly skilled people to do diagnosis. So what we have helped them to do is to digitize some of the cases that they see, blood samples, and create a database of complex cases that can be used to train remotely other technicians and doctors and nurses very far away in other parts of the country so that they also learn how to diagnose things so that things don't all converge at the central centers for diagnosis. So that's the one thing that we have done. We have also, and this database continues to be used in training, but also used in practice at hospitals, and we cite here that is used at the Tambo Memorial Hospital in Boksburg on a weekly basis to run training sessions, but also in practical diagnosis. We have a challenge that we also then want to tackle, and this particular challenge of trying to eradicate malaria is not a problem that is unique to South Africa, and it underscores our sense of responsibility to what happens across the continent. So we might not be having serious issues of malaria in South Africa, but Africa as a region has got serious problems with malaria. And what we try to do is to not just provide control or, you know, mediation of malaria, but rather to come up with very novel technologies that might actually lead to eradication of malaria by interrupting the parasite's life cycle within the system. So if you can disrupt that life cycle, it means that the parasite will not continue to propagate, it will not be transmitted, and with time, you can actually lead to eradication of the disease. And so we look to a variety of compounds that can do this, and we've developed this capability to such an extent that global initiatives like the Gates Foundation, Medicines for Malaria Ventures, and so on, are looking at us to provide leadership in this particular area, so therefore we screen compounds that come from a variety of places in the world. We look at diagnostic technologies as well that are ICT enabled. This particular one again is an example of how we create these mobile devices so that people that deal with pregnant women at the primary level can understand whether, in this specific example, using Doppler technology, it apparently is a technology that is evolving from the defense space, to understand using this ultrasound device whether babies are small because they are just small people, or whether the fetus is small because there is an unhealthy condition that the mother has. In which case, if the baby is small and healthy, they carry on and they don't have to do anything. If the baby is small and sick, then there is a referral upward within the system. Instead of referring all into the system, we decongest the system in that way. We also have other technologies like in paper-based diagnostic that allows us to see what's going on, you know, in the blood at primary care level and so on and so forth. So there is a summary of this type of technologies on this particular slide. And the thing to mention that is remarkable here is that we are creating these devices through a multidisciplinary combination of our life sciences capability, engineering capability, and ICT capability. And then putting all that together, getting what we call a CE mark, which is like a standard certification that one requires for recognition of the device by the WHO. And we've done that for three key technologies. We are in discussion now with the Medical Research Council and the DST to say, can we be the place in the country where we create these sorts of devices based on the research that comes out of universities and other places.
Thank you, Richard. We'll turn now to our work in energy as well as industry and piloting titanium and so on, and conclude with some comments on governance that the CFO will make. So in this section, the political guarantee will take on.
Thank you for the solution.
Sorry for interrupting. I was just wanted to check whether it is possible through, I don't know how we can do it, that we present it in such a manner that, because I see we still have a number of slides that must be presented, and I had somebody saying that we were under pressure. So I don't know, not that they must short, you know, you must be stingy with the information. No, you must give us as much information as possible, but in such a manner that we just become conscious that, you know, we might end up not arriving properly at the tail end of what needs to be done. I don't know, Chair. It's just that I didn't know how to better put it, to phrase what I wanted to say.
No, we understand fully what you're taking so long. We will be more selective and try and conclude in the next 5 minutes literally, so that we can then allow questions and respond.
I'll try to brief you. On energy, really, the key issues are around energy efficiency currently, and we're assisting industry there to be competitive. With industry competitiveness, we're looking at either introducing new products, processes, or improving efficiency. In this case, we're working with UNIDO. There's a program of the DTI where we visit plants and assist them with energy efficiency strategies. And to that effect, we're able to save industry about this 760 million, and this equates to really energy enough to power, I think the numbers are the 120 middle income households. The next point here, we can move on, is how do you really quantify our wind resources in the country? The first step in doing that, we did the we identified the potential areas in the country that are suitable for wind and solar, and really we're using the current wind atlas map. The next stage is how do you take that information and turn it into an energy atlas, and we're working with the Fraunhofer Institute in doing that. It's something that hasn't been done in the country before, and we're delighted to be part of that. I think we can skip this. On industry support, we support industry in different ways. First, we either embark on programs where we'll develop new industries. Secondly, we look at existing industries and see how we can support them to make them competitive. And I'll give examples of what we're doing in that regard. In this particular example, we have a big program where we're looking at clays in the country, of particular interest for us, those clays that possess unique properties, refraining from using the word nano clays, but actually this is what we are looking at. And these clays can be used in a variety of applications, cosmetics, in strengthening, in improving properties of plastics, in paints, in so many other areas. I'll give examples later. South Africa, we have abundance of these clays, and we've seen them, other people using them for beautification or other applications. In this case, we are looking at industrial use of those nano clays, and we are looking at developing that industry in the country. Let's move on. These are examples of the products that are coming out of the program. We are looking at the antiperspirant. What is important about this product, I just like you, for those who have seen roll-ons after use, you have this whitish after effect. We can incorporate these nanoparticles and you can have a roll-on that is clear and you don't have that after effect. We are working with a local pharmaceutical company, AMCA, to be producing this roll-ons. Another one is a petroleum jelly down there. You have seen with time discoloration in petroleum jelly. We can incorporate this nano clays where then we can improve the longevity and the qualities of this petroleum jelly. Titanium is of interest to a lot of people. Here we are really looking at developing new titanium industry. We just had a discussion with Richard Bay, Industrial Development Zone, where they would like to develop within the IDZ titanium industry development zone. South Africa, we are the largest, we have the largest resources of titanium, and we are looking here at developing technologies to process titanium, but as well as technologies to make products out of titanium. We have received a lot of support from the Department of Science and Technology to have a pilot planned at the CSR to demonstrate the feasibility of this new technology. This is the picture of the pilot plant at the CSR. This is what I refer to. In addition to producing titanium from the ore, we need to look at new ways of making titanium. Titanium is expensive. It's expensive partly because it is difficult to manufacture. You machine it and you lose up to 95% of waste. So I'm looking at novel ways of making titanium. And in this case, we're using powder and we're at the forefront of developing those technologies. This is the machine. It's a technology that has been developed at the CSR, where we're using lasers and we'll be using those powders to make aerospace-grade parts. Here we're working with Airbus, Boeing, Aerosuit, the local company. In the previous example, we're working with local companies, Tronos, IDC, as a sponsor for the program. This hasn't been done in the world. The current commercially available machines, they can do up to 400 half a meter length part. We are looking at making 2 meters, and if we crack this, this is a game changer, potential game changer for the country. Members have visited at the conference. We visited some of these enterprises that we have supported. The challenge here with SMMEs, they have great ideas, potential products, but access to these facilities is important. Ability to improve their product quality, ability to make the product itself, expand on the product range, quality assurance, the processing to consistently produce the product is a challenge. Packaging, as you can see there, is a major challenge. So we're assisting SMMEs to be able to do that. The next phase actually is to assist industry broadly, and we have received interest from the likes of Nestle to be part of the program. This program is supported by the DfC as well as Jobs Fund. The intention really is to create jobs.
I think some of the turning more to the sort of ICT industry, there's two examples on the slide at the top that talks about text-to-speech in indigenous languages. CSR has done a lot of work in, and built language models for all South Africa's languages, and we are able to both synthesize speech, that is to go from text to spoken language, as well as the other way around. So you can have for instance, on Google search, if you're able to do a search in Afrikaans or in isiZulu, and by speaking to your cell phone if you've got that loaded, and this is an example of the sort of uses of that. The other thing that we've done is we've developed a technology that is very good at compressing video, and it compresses it based on the link that you have. If you have got a nice fast link, 4G or a Wi-Fi link, then the compression is very limited, but if you're on a slow edge or have a not so good link, then it compresses more and the image quality is a little bit less, and that is per user, and we're using this to allow digital entrepreneurs to set up their own kind of broadcasting filmmaking businesses.
Thank you. We thought we should just to do it one slide, because this is very important, showing our R&D in other parts of the continent that are not just focused on South Africa. But, and then that's, I'm not going to read the list, but there it is. Maybe there are some of the things that we can talk in more detail about them as appropriate. I think that really, for present purposes, completes our story. Our story is on the group that we're doing. We'd like to. We can talk ever so briefly about some of our key performance indicators and finances and so on, and I'd like to request Chris to do so then.
Thanks, Dr. Bihichi. In the interest of time, if I may, on this slide, just say all targets met, and just highlight a few things to note. There are a number of trend slides that you have in your pack, so we won't go to those in detail, but the trends are all generally positive. Showing growth across the CSR. Contract R&D, just to highlight that, is a 12% growth from the previous year. I think in the current economic environment, I think very positive. Royalty and license income, you could argue, is modest, but you need to keep in mind that royalties are often derived from you licensing technology to a person and getting a percentage of the sales that they generate with that technology. And typically, a royalty rate is around 3%. So 10 million rand there reflects 300 million rand of economic activity that has been stimulated us through us transferring technology. With licensing is a very small part of what we do in terms of tech transfer. Contract R&D is in fact also tech transfer. People are paying for the knowledge that we have. In terms of transformation or learning and growth, I think trend slide there in terms of the growth in SET staff is important because growth gives you ability to speed up transformation, which is a key imperative of the CSR. And again here, if I could just also say all targets are met, and this remains a key focus area of the CSR in terms of developing people. Lastly, finance and governance. The first one there is to highlight the investment in property, plant and equipment is the largest investment we've ever done in one single financial year. I think it's key that if you want to attract the best scientists, we need the best facilities, and we need top-class equipment for that. The investment is largely limited by our operational cash flow, and we hope to continue with investments of that nature going forward. Our total income growth in terms of top-line growth is just under 11%, so including our parliamentary grant, still a healthy growth for the CSR. And lastly, we remain a going concern in terms of we are financially sustainable, and importantly, our triple BWE rating, level 2, and we had very limited disabling injuries during the year. Generally a safe place to work. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Come to the end of the presentation. Raise your hands. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think Honourable Bakal really got your question. I think one thing that I like Honourable Bakal with them is that the passion that he showed is beyond this. And that's what, in fact, if you've got passion, even if you don't have money, you make things happen. you might have money if you don't have questions. Might not happen while you're talking to someone. So I'm very interested. It's unfortunate, Honorable Matele, that you notice even the chair became so interested that he was not calling them to order. To kick off because I'm passionate, I'm listening passionately with what I do. But thank you very much. Members, it's all yours. Obviously, you can see that there's still too much that is not there. But if you want to comment on these ones that I've mentioned and some of the things that you know, feel free to comment.
Here when my honourable colleague was making the interjection, but I want to support him, what he said. I think the last slide, the indicators, were probably the most important slide. Because then he's telling the story of the CSIR in terms of what you did. The CSIR is, for me, a stamp of quality. We know that. We know it is a fantastic organisation. We know that you have tentacles maybe all over South Africa, into the world. We know that because we see so many other presentations. So, but the exercise for today was to unpack how what you have done, how does it indicate. So I want to thank you for the last key performance indicators because that is telling your story. And you should have unpacked that a little bit more. And that is why I think Honorable Matale was making that interjection. But thank you very much. CSIR is the good news story of South Africa. It's a good story to tell all over the world. It's a stamp of quality. And I want to thank you for that. But what I would have loved to see is a little bit more about your finances, what it is costing taxpayers, what is your revenue doing, and I'll probably unpack it more from your hard copy document. But you know, I think that is basically what we were looking for in this 45 minutes, because that is what we had. Unfortunately, we run into all the entities. But thank you very much for a good job done. We are proud of the CSIR.
Thank you very much. That's a lawyer.
Chair, I think I agree with the Honorable Korenhoff. Mine is a matter that we observed when we were the CEO and the board member, where we went to a lady there who is having some products, a cream, and I don't know what other thing, but they smell very nice, those things. You know, I won't mind to apply that oil. Yeah, it smells very, very nice. Yeah, but there's no difference between it and the E45, and these nice things that the creams that you have. And she's very appreciative of the intervention that you have made. Her only problem is that you have helped her to have these things manufactured. But the problem is, I think, the transportation to go get this stuff or to get this stuff maybe sold. The things are here. The money that was asked was given, but that money did not address the transport part of that. Just today I didn't take a particular, but we did raise it with the chief when he was showing us around the place, and somehow she didn't whisper enough for him to hear. But we heard that, and we then said we'll raise it formally with yourself when we meet, that you are doing a very wonderful job, and those people are very grateful. But in the course of helping, I think, I don't know what is the rod that you use to measure that you help this one in this fashion, you help this one, they are in the same setup, but this one gets better benefit from the assistance. This one does not get the things that he gets, but they are in the same space. And this one is like prosper. This one doesn't prosper because utushifemaro surumauto. You know, it's the when we were giving people farms in the beginning, we buy a farm from a willing seller. We take that farm, we call this one who was staying there before was expelled. Here is your farm. Then the farm have oranges because it's June. You know, then they peel they harvest the oranges, they sell. They get the money for that harvest for that year. For argument's sake, 1 million. They have nothing, these people, just the poor community given farms. Now they have 1 million. What do? They distribute it amongst themselves because they don't have money to buy food. They distribute it because they are mainly, each family ends up getting 50 rand, which does not help in any way. The following year, because they don't know what they must do with this farm, all they know is that they will get oranges. The following year, the same thing, they go and harvest. But the harvest of the following year and the previous year, they are not the same. Because the first year harvest, the farm was still healthy. The tree fertilized, they got the water, irrigation, everything. The second year, the irrigation and the fertilizing were not there because after selling the oranges, they ate the money. So the quality becomes lesser, and the quantity is lesser. If they got 100 the previous year, the following year they get 90. The other year they get 80. That year they get 70. That other year they get 40. Next thing, they get 10. The 10th year, they get nothing. And as the decline comes in terms of the quantity, fewer people associate with the farm because they see it's no longer working, it's fading until 1% remains with that farm. He picks or she picks the last orange. The following year, there is nothing. That fellow no longer goes there. He goes back to the village. They sit there at the village. That farm just collapses, natural collapses. The tree becomes the, you know, they have some leaves in some parts of the branch, and others they just, you know, get off, it gets dry. And then your pastor says, hey, this farm used to be a very good farm, man, but it's dead. We killed it by doing something in good faith, but not giving the necessary support to these people so that they know that when they go into a farm, you need irrigation, you need fertilizers, but you also need to remove old trees and plant small trees that are going to take you sometimes 10 years before they can yield anything. So they must understand this thing. So that even when they eat, so that the day there is no rain, they must know what to eat. So things like that. Now you have helped these people, which is good, and they really appreciate it, I must say. They talk very proudly about this product. But they have this product, you know, like one friend of mine had a plot and he planted a lot of cabbages there. And this cabbage, they grow, they must be harvested. And the fellow doesn't know where he must take the cabbages to because nobody wants to buy them, but nobody comes with a bucket to buy that cabbage there. It just becomes a problem. You give somebody something in good faith, but you don't help them to run the whole journey. I think that's the long and short of those people. And with that, CEO will come and raise it with yourself and your team when you visit here in Parliament. And I think, Chair, I did not sell out I have raised the matter, was instructed to raise to the CEO and the team. That is the thing that I was asked to come and raise it on behalf of that lady. They are very grateful, you must understand, even when you go to them, but hey, we help you, next thing you are not grateful. Yeah. They are very grateful. They just want to be assisted to have the total picture so that what they do becomes successful. But like you said, you know, you are doing a very good job and we are very proud of what you are doing. We have seen it at the conference there that, no, indeed, there is a good story that we can tell our people and the world that, you know, South Africa is really alive and CSIR will be our beacon of hope. Thank you very much.
Thinking that on that note, we'll just give over to you to...
Thank you very much, and thank you for the presentation to the CEO and the team. Congratulating you also on the clean audit. Much as it is within the department, forms part of the department outcome, the CSIR is the only one that is totally green. You see others, there's some yellow, some white, although it's not significant. I know that the only thing that you had was the 117,000, which was the double red, which we were also told that they were correctional measures, consequential measures in that regard. But also we understand that it was a human error. I think their visit to the happy 70th birthday once again, and the attending the conference was a real eye-opener on the things that you theorize when you come and present to us here, and also the oversight that you undertook 2 weeks before that. We also an eye-opener of the extent of the work that you've done and the appreciation of what you are doing as CSIR. I was showing my colleague here the waist blinders and what they do. Because now I understood what it is you are there, and so I can talk about it. I share the sentiments that you raised by Honorable Matale on those who were incubated by yourself and the extent that they showed the appreciation. The one that was on the photos, at least they said they do have a market outside the Republic. But it is within South Africa that they don't have the market, and their product is healthier than what is sold currently. And I took some of the pamphlets and at the NGC I spoke to the DG of small business. But it is important to come and talk to yourself, to CSIR, come and see those that are incubated because they are small, and then also take over from there. Because it is important that we create markets for them. As Honorable Matale said, that the packaging is superb, you know, very attractive. And sometimes you buy something not because it's good, it's the way it's packaged that like, attracts you and you want to buy it and try it. So I think there is that need, and also there will be a need. And I said that I'll talk to the Minister of Small Business, that he should make a point to see and be attached to those incubators so that they can be able to take over. And I think Australian industry is supposed to do that too. But I just want to echo the sentiments of my colleagues and agree that the game is about people and incapacitation. We're proud of CSIR. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Majid. On that note, can we... You, you can just rattle through when we close it.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start in sequential order the question or the observation by the Honorable Kornoff that the just part we have spoken, I think should have unpacked more is in the KPIs. I did not, I'm afraid, give Chris an adequate opportunity. Some of it is even in this slide sitting behind these clickables, for example, trends in general articles. We then can see what has happened over the years and the explanations for some of those fluctuations, and then trying to also give a sense of where we want to go. So I think you're absolutely right. With your permission, maybe I trust all of this is in your pack as well. Do please feel free if there's a particular set of indicators that you want to talk about in more detail. We can very happy to do so. Income trends, for example, things like royalty income. It's very difficult. It's always small, and we try our best to like for that to be bigger. But it's just the way it is in an institution such as ours. In fact, it reflects not that we're not successful necessarily, but that because companies go out and become part of the economy of the country, what we really want to measure impact rather than just what comes into the organization. If you look at what impact they're having in the economy, and that's what Chris was speaking to earlier, rather than simply how much, what proportion of that income comes back to us as a world. Science, engineering, and technology, because of who we are, want to really keep growing those numbers. The dips we are looking at, that particularly in a specific explanation for them, but you can see that broadly speaking, we want those numbers to just keep going up. One area where we have a challenge, not just us, but collectively as an organization, is for example, the number of PhDs, people who are really high level researchers. Well, roughly of the order of 300 PhDs in an organization of 2,500. Arguably, it's a bit on the low side compared to international benchmarks. But when you say international benchmarks, we're talking now about organizations like Fraunhofer in Germany, where they really have a depth of, or Vitae in Finland, where the school system is very heavily feeding into the universities, people are then going to take pursue scientific careers. This is something collectively we need to clearly work on in South Africa, so that there are many more young people who are able to see science as a career. And many people who are good at mathematics, for example, and you can understand that, tend to want to go into the world of finance. And there's a need there too. I'm not saying they shouldn't. Anyway, despite that, we are looking at numbers of around about 400 by 2019-20. I think I will stop there on that one, but you and then invite colleagues to respond to the others. But
I just wanted also to raise that the issue of also PhDs is also relative to the types of projects that are being done in the country. If one looks, for example, now with the SKA, it has opened up some gates, and then there's an opportunity to increase people to study in that space because of the projects are exciting and because also of the interaction with the outside world in terms of what is happening, which is why the types of projects that we are choosing are projects that we hope are going to generate interest, and as a result will bring in quite more people to come into the South African environment, so to enable the development of those that are in. It is also linked to what Smu also talked about around universities. I think once we've got a very good link with universities and they are participating in what we are doing, it will then help us in terms of the throughput that we're expecting of people who are keen and interested in science.
Thank you. Then also look at support of people in SMMEs and the particular example Honorable Matale that you raised and Honorable Maseko. Let me just make the high-level point that the point you make about linking to small business, I think is a very good one. That's certainly something we need to be looking at, because we incubate small enterprises in an activity like BITC to a certain degree. They will need to sort of graduate, move on, and get additional support if there's difficulty with getting produce to market, for example, and so on. Then there needs to be additional support from the trading industry, from small business and so on. So the point is entirely well taken. And there is some of my colleagues here in fact sit on the steering committee that's looking all the time at what are we supporting people who are incubated within the BITC optimally. And it is, by the way, it's not the only initiative we have. There are others that we have not spoken about explicitly here today. So, but maybe my colleagues may want to say a little bit more about it.
Well said, Dr. Smith. Actually, the challenge with a program like BITC is really access to market. And really, the first phase of the program was to assist small businesses with scientific and technical challenges. And we recognize that we need to partner with other entities and especially relevant departments that support the small businesses, as well as the DTI. We have been engaging as well with the DST, who is supportive of this program, to see how we can partner with other people who can do that part of the value chain much better than the CSR, but we'll continue to support the entities going forward.
Indeed, underpinning all of this is ongoing support and vision from DST. For example, our activities in ECD, economic and enterprise creation for development, is exactly in the spirit of what we're doing here with the BITC and in a number of industries. By the way, many of which are in various communities in different parts of the country. The example you gave resonates well with the kind of work that ECD does, where they might, for example, it'll be an intervention in something to do with better preservation or farming of oranges, give them particular example. But they would also be concerned with bringing the not just the technology skills, but the associated business skills. But I'm talking still here about specific interventions. I'm not talking about the macro issue of what do you do about farm trade.
These incubators, it's not that these people, we are saying this, why they are telling us it's the truth. We don't know. Because you are helping them, you must meet them. And say, you are saying you are given assistance, but your assistance is not the same as this one has more benefit, but yet you are given the same assistance, you enter the same door and given the same assistance. Yours with strings attached, this one with no strings attached. Is it true? You might find that they were saying, because they were seeing us, they just tell us things that don't exist. Because we also said, yeah, tell us, man, tell us, we will help them. So we the orange thing, it was just an example. This one you must take back to the office. Get somebody who works with those people. Then get these people, here you have a problem. We were in parliament, they raised this thing. And we said we are going to listen to what the issues are and resolve them. And come and give us a feedback. You don't have to give us a feedback the day you come to appear before us. You can just write CEO
we are not generalizing. It's a lady who's producing cream. It's just that the name of the cream, I don't know. The pizza. That's right. And her surname is Maseko. No relation of the name. Her surname is Maseko. He has seen that lady. So that lady must be called in a spirit of building. We have received your issue, which was raised in Parliament, that there are problems. What are the problems so that we can intervene? Maybe she will say this is the problem and we solve it on the spot. You don't need to check whether B is getting a different treatment. So it's a basic question just like that. Then, once resolved, he must get a report, the chair. The chair will brief us in a committee that, no, that matter of that lady has been resolved. Then we can write to her through the chair that the problem you raised to us during the conference of the CSIR, we are happy to hear that it has been resolved. Is that the case? Because we have been given a report to say so. Then she will confirm that it has been resolved and that's it. So, yeah, I thought I should just indicate what we expect from them on that specific matter. Yeah, thanks, sir.
We understand that we'll look at it and take action.
Okay, is that all we saw?
Okay. Chair, I think, yes, and unless the federal
thank you, Chair. I think the only thing that I also would like to say, once we've highlighted the cooperation within the continent, within SADC in particular, I do believe as a board member that we need to have more of that activity, but that activity requires funding also and a consensus drive. I think if it is possible to get support from the committee and from yourself, Chair, to say what more can we do, because you see DBSA has got infrastructure projects and many things that are taking place in SADC region, and I do believe that CSIR has got a bigger role to play and to ensure that the people within our community and region are able to do more than what we are doing currently.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think mine is just to say we believe that science and technology is an answer to most of the problems, including our challenges in South Africa. And if we don't seem to understand that, then we're making a mistake. But fortunately for us, we've managed to make government to understand that science is the key to everything. And hence we have President talking the way that was talking on that CSIR conference. You can see the government is changing its attitude towards that, and we think it's key. So thank you very much for your report. We accept your report and we're going to take it through. As we have said, that we feel, having recognized that science and technology is the key, we feel science and technology is underfunded. And we feel that science and technology, we can't use it like the other departments where we say we're a developing country. You are competing with the world. I understand when you say we mustn't moan when people leave you, but we don't want them to leave and go to China and America. We want them to live in South Africa. And it's interesting that some of the big countries that are good economies, it's because they still depend people from those countries that are developing, and they do that, and they make their countries and better economies. Now we are able to keep our trains in South Africa. And it is always said that a human being uses 25% of his or her brain, yet there's another 75% that is blank. And science and technology is making us to be innovative and relaxed and use even the other part that we're not using. So we like what you're doing. I had hoped that we would put you, so that we could go on and on. But I forgot that some of the people are staying with their wife, with their husband here in Cape Town. I thought it was only me. My wife is in Cape Town, so I've got nothing to do. So I can stay until 12 midnight. But the other people are not at the same position. So, but now we've got to come to an end. Thank you very much. But there are two things that you have said. One of them was about the problem of integrating the developers. And that comes with our political immaturity. Where if I'm a minister or an minister, I think that is not my legacy. I forget that I'm working for government. I want to do my own thing and be the one who's in the media that I've succeeded. And forget that I'm not doing it for myself, I'm doing it for the country. I think it's something that we need to address. The other one is that the key thing that we seem not to understand is that we're coming from our part, that the private and public are running parallel. Something that runs parallel will never meet. The one that will meet is the one that goes diversity. They actually meet if you go to the east and the other one goes to the west. They meet somewhere. But those who move parallel, they never meet. So we're going to try and make the public and private to meet. And it's one of the jobs that we have to do. And it's a challenge for us as government. As I said, I think the government is starting to understand that science and technology and CSIR is one of those that needs to be done. We'll send to the court. We're going to talk on behalf of the MP and see if we can make recommendations that are going to be helpful. Thank you very much. Well done, Chris. I think it's not the CEO that has made that good audience, but I think it's you. but we'll give the accolade to the CEO. Thank you very much. Don't worry about the Macedo. The Macedo is not related to this one. It's another Macedo. But we want a solution to that problem. So thank you very much. Members, thank you very much. Sorry for keeping you until late, knowing that you have got wives and husbands. If I don't have one, it doesn't mean that I'm going to have to have one. Thank you very much. Thank you for
Thank you.